Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. I'm Taylor Grusing, cow-calf field specialist based out of the Mitchell office. And today our guest is going to be covering all things weather and climate. We are happy to bring to the podcast for the first episode of 2026, Laura Edwards, our SDSU Extension state climatologist based out of Aberdeen, South Dakota. And with the crazy weather that we've been having here in the fall, now as we go into official winter time frame, hopefully we can kind of get an idea of what the outlook looks like. So welcome, Laura.
Hi, thank you, Taylor.
So with that, kind of like I said, the weather has been very up and down, right? So we've had really, really colds, and now we're going into a really, really warm week. And so what can you tell us kind of from the short-term outlook of, and maybe even the past couple months, like what's happening and what are we looking forward to in the short term?
Yeah, we sure have had a roller coaster ride in the fall into winter season. And even looking way, you know, back further towards summer of 2025, I should say, we had some really extreme rainfall, especially in May in western South Dakota and August. In the east and other areas where it was really an up and down year. We carried some dryness along the south, dryness to drought conditions around the southern part of the state. And so, yeah, it's been kind of a roller coaster and variable everywhere across South Dakota this year. But overall, the fall, September through most of November, was pretty warm and dry. We had some record warm counties in the southeastern part of the state for that September through November, that 3 month fall season. We had about 11 counties that were the record warmest fall in 130 years of climate history. So,
what
really,
temperatures were those just off the top of your head? 60s or was it more than that?
The average temperatures were more about 5 to 6 degrees above average for that season. So pretty significant when you think that was a long run of 3 months. And then the week of Thanksgiving kind of changed a whole lot there with a lot of winter weather, you know, travel issues, but a lot of snow. Also, that contributed, I think, to some challenges in handling cattle, making sure, you know, things were cleared so cattle could get out and about, especially if you kept them closer to home in a yard, something like that. So that really was started a more wintry pattern. And what's interesting is I'll take Sioux Falls as an example. In November through about December 20th, about when we're recording this, they've had about 18 inches of snow, just over 18 inches of snow. That's more than all of what they had last year. They had 16 inches last year, the whole
really?
Season, which
that's
is dry for them
so,
too.
Yeah, that's why it feels so snowy all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, basically we've had a couple pretty mild winters, pretty easy winters as far as snow issues go. And so we got hit with a bang right away there that week of Thanksgiving. But as we're talking now, you know, the week of Christmas, a lot of that is melting. We're turning back towards a warmer pattern. And that looks like what we're seeing in early January for the start of the new year. But we have La Nina in play, and that is still a factor here for the winter season. And as we're looking out ahead at the outlooks, it does look like temperatures will trend back towards colder latter part of January into February, which is more typical of a La Nina pattern, to have that colder, colder than average temperatures, you know, really focused often in the latter part of the winter season. So I don't think winter's over yet. we started off, you know, off and running pretty quickly here, but we're kind of in a mild time before I think the next shoe drops, so to speak, on temperatures.
Right. So with the warm fall, we got a lot of grazing, maybe even stayed out longer on some native grasses, and then slowly cattle came, closer to home, just kind of naturally as weaning starts on corn residue, cover crops. But like you said, when that really cold snap of Thanksgiving hit, maybe we started feeding cattle already, during that spell. There was 5, 6 inches of snow on the ground not too long after that. And with the freeze thaw pattern we're in, it does make it kind of challenging to say, oh, I can't leave them 20 miles away anymore. I need to bring them close to home. And then now, it thaws out and oh, I wish I could take them back over there. And so if that pattern is going to kind of stay, it might be a note to listeners to, kind of take a look at that long-term forecast. Maybe have some hay stored somewhere in between. You can supplement out on those grazing acres because when it does thaw out, they might be able to still go back and forage for some of those things. But to take a farther deep in step into La Nina, can you explain what that weather pattern is compared to the El Nino? I believe is the opposite, or they kind of flip-flop. So maybe go into that a little bit.
Yeah, so this year what we see is a La Nina pattern, which really originates back in the Pacific Ocean near the equator, and that's reflecting colder than average ocean temperatures around the equator and the Pacific. The reason why that can change our weather patterns up here, way in northern U.S., is that it can change that jet stream pattern, and so what happens in the La Nina years is we see typically that jet stream kind of over Canada dip down further south and bring us some colder weather. What we saw in November into early December was a lot of Alberta Clipper type systems. So these are kind of riding the jet stream, bringing that cold air down from Canada. Usually not a lot of moisture. We saw some snow with that, but a lot of wind. And that's what we saw kind of around that middle part of December, where we had some extreme winds pushing 100 miles an hour in the Rapid City area. Seeing they tend to bring more winds and colder temperatures. And so depending where the jet stream kind of lies, but that is kind of typical again of La Nina when the jet stream dips further south and we're kind of sitting right under it. More in that colder zone. In El Nino years, the opposite happens where warmer temperatures in that Pacific equator region kind of change the jet stream patterns and how they affect North America again. And then we tend to be on the warmer side of things. In either case, in both cases, it doesn't really tell us a lot on precipitation. Sometimes in La Nina years, we see more snowfall. That I think that's more due to the colder temperatures, not necessarily more precipitation, like more liquid. It just comes when it's colder. So, we do see wet and dry years both in both La Nina and El Nino. There's kind of a big mix. So it's not really easy to say what our wintertime snowfall or precipitation is. Under either of the situations, they really affect us more on the temperature side.
Okay. So with the short-term outlook of La Nina holding in place, or are we going to switch?
Yeah, so we see La Nina this year. It's a weak event, but that doesn't necessarily mean weak impacts. It just means that the ocean temperatures out there in the Pacific are just slightly colder than average. They're just barely meeting the minimum kind of threshold. But we've already seen, a colder start again to December, and expecting cold temperatures to return. It's anticipated and forecast that those ocean temperatures will warm up probably in February. In a typical year, we see them warm up more in the March to April time frame. So it's a little earlier than we typically see, but given the distance here, geographic distance, there's often a lag in the system for the atmosphere to respond and for the jet stream to kind of change pattern. So, we can still see those La Niña impacts at colder temperature in particular, kind of linger into March. Is kind of what the outlook is seeing right now.
When we have these drastic swings in temperatures from really, really nice to, back to normal, that's not necessarily the water changing temp that fast. That's just the jet stream that builds off of the water temp, but it's not saying, oh, I'm going to be, change the whole ocean temperature as much, right?
Right, yeah, that's more of a weather thing. Where La Niña or El Nino is more of a climate thing, I'd say longer time scales. And that jet stream fluctuates, day to day, week to week. We also look at other things too, like what's going on over the Arctic area, how cold are they getting? Are we going to see some of that very cold air come down or just moderately cold air? So we look at other regions of the world too, and see kind of how they're pushing and pulling on the jet stream and other weather patterns from other directions.
We watch the weather at night, right, on the local news station, and some days, get tomorrow right, but now they have kind of a 10-day outlook. Is how reliable is that, even from like your standpoint, of you're getting weekly or monthly updates, how often are things being updated?
Yeah, so we see, so at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, they issue a 6 to 10 day outlook, and a 8 to 14 day outlook. And they issue those every day, every afternoon, about 3 p.m. Central. They show up online. On the weekends, they're automated, but during the week, they have forecasters that kind of finesse that outlook. So they do those longer range things, and when I'm looking at those 2 week outlooks, I'm more looking for patterns that are developing, and they do tell you from day to day what their confidence is out of a scale of 1 to 5. They'll say, oh, we're not too confident in this one. Oh no, we're very confident in this. So you can also read the discussion. I think some people don't notice that there is a whole like kind of narrative that the forecaster will write based on what they're seeing. But yeah, when you're talking short-term weather, like 1 out to about 7 days, they're getting pretty good now, better than 30, 40 years ago. And so I think we can have more confidence there. The challenges are when you're looking at 2, 3, 4 weeks out or longer, when is that pattern going to change? And that's when you see a little more uncertainty and a little more, I think depends when you look at it, right? If you're looking at it when it's pretty consistent pattern or when it's changing a lot. And looking more in that in the monthly outlooks or those seasonal time frames, way far out. Again, their discussion might not say how confident they are, but sometimes the map themselves, looking how deep the colors are, if they're really, high probability of wetter or warmer or what have you, that kind of gives you an indication of their confidence as well, in any given outlook. So, in general, in this part of the country, there tends to be higher skill in the temperature outlook in those monthly and seasonal outlooks. Precipitation's kind of mixed. Summertime is more challenging than the wintertime, partly because you get a lot of those localized thunderstorms that just hit or miss here and there, and it can be very local, and those are harder to pin down when you're looking at a national map. But yeah, it's I think precipitation and that seasonal outlook in this part of the country is one of the more challenging kind of climate problems, so to speak, up here. So we're talking about ranching and livestock management. It's hard to forecast, now, like, are we gonna have a drought next summer? That's a tough one.
Right.
You can say, wow, we're kind of at a tipping point now. We had a dry fall. We've had some moisture here that's now melting in the soils. What does that mean for grass next year? Will our alfalfa, suffer more winter kill issues if it's more exposed now without snow cover on it? Things like that are a little harder to predict when you're looking at the seasonal scale. And so I think plan for the worst, hope for the best. I know our extension team has a lot of resources for drought management, for monitoring your conditions,
Right.
precipitation, your forages, your grasses, your livestock health, keeping track of all of that as much as you can, to kind of catch things, before they happen in a disastrous fashion.
Right. Like you mentioned, the extension websites or extension.sdstate.edu has a plethora of information for any season, right? And as we were discussing how, maybe the 1 week outlook on temperature, is pretty good. So if you are looking forward to, working cattle 1 weekend and it's really cold, take a look at the forecast and, you might have some warmer temperatures not too far away. But you've mentioned a couple tools that you use, and I think some of those might be available to the public too. So I believe you manage, or as a team of you manage, the Mezonet system. Why don't you talk about that a little bit and how producers can look up some of this stuff themselves?
Yeah, so the South Dakota Mezonet is a network of weather stations across the state, managed by SDSU. I collaborate with them very, very strongly. They have over 100 weather stations set out across the state right now, and they're still building their network. They have a plan to put another 50 more out there, basically through the end of 2027. So, almost everyone in the state will be within about 20, 25 miles of one of these weather stations by the time they're done, with just a couple exceptions. So they're measuring all kinds of things: temperature, precipitation. There's has a heated rain gauge, so it measures winter and summer
I've always
precipitation.
wondered how that works, but that
Yep,
makes
it has a
sense.
heated rim and it has a scale inside that weighs the water. And then they have snow depth for the winter season, wind speed and direction, solar radiation, so that then they calculate like evapotranspiration. But I know solar radiation is also helpful when you're looking at hay drying down and those kinds of things.
Heat index.
And then soil sensors, they have five different depths of soil sensors that are measuring both temperature and moisture, from 2 inches down to 40 inches. They're not evenly spaced all the way, but they're measuring all that. Basically, total water is what their focus is, but they're measuring a lot of weather and other variables that can be helpful for a lot of different things. And so, when I'm a couple of things that we've done, and Warren Ruschke, actually, Dr. Ruschke, has collaborated with them to create the livestock stress tool, which I think is really, really cool. It uses the comprehensive cattle index. And so it looks at extreme weather conditions, both for adult and newborn livestock. It works in both summer and winter. So it's looking at extreme heat and extreme cold. The extreme heat side also includes humidity, and the extreme cold also calculates wind chill, for example. So if you're in
Right.
calving season, that might be important. And there is, they've also added a like a weather forecast piece on there to predict the cattle comfort index out about 2 days or so. So if
Okay.
you're anticipating, a big change in weather, especially when that early spring, or fall, if you get a big weather change, you might want to check that out. Yeah,
And
and
those things can be helpful when we talk about rations of adjusting energy, basically, when it does get really cold or really hot. If you want to supplement them a little bit extra. So that sounds like that tool can or kind of almost do that math or that prediction for you. And then, or predict to say, hey, it's going to be, this amount of wind chill. Let's get that protection set up, whether it's a line of bales or windbreaks. And things like that. I know I look at it a lot in the planting season or kind of in the spring when, forages need to be planted for our spring crops like oats and barley and such. And so that ground being frozen or not, or like the temperature and things. But like you back to the cattle climate thing, they always say it's not the heat, it's the humidity, right? So and that's a big deal in the fed cattle world. So that's a really good tool that people should find. And what's the website for that again?
Well, it's all through the Mesonet, and they have a tools menu that has all the tools there. So that's Mesonet, MESONET dot SDstate.edu is their homepage. And then go to the tools menu and you can find that. Another thing about that too is if you do have a loss due to extreme cold or extreme hot, humid conditions, FSA in South Dakota does also use that data or permits you to use that data to help justify the loss. So something else to know if you need some documentation on the other end of things after the event.
Kind of historical background is there? I know you said there's going to be almost 100 in South Dakota, but can we say, back in this year, this I remember this being like the worst winter, like can we look up those type of things and compare it to current days?
Yeah, they have some history, but like I said, yeah, like we've talked about, the network is they have some stations that go back 30 years or longer. But a lot of these stations, most of them are pretty new within the last, 3 years or so. So since about 2022. So some of them have some short histories, but as we go forward, I mean, there's going to be I think they've said 1 million data points a day with all the variables that they're measuring from 150 stations at the end. So it's going to be just kind of a gold mine of data. I think we're going to be over, we're already kind of overwhelmed with as much as is coming in. So that's kind of an open invitation too. If you as a livestock or range person are interested in some kind of weather data or tool or map or something, we're open to ideas of how we can improve the access or the usability of the data, present it in a way that's more useful to you. Give us a shout and we'll try to make it happen as much as we can.
If you maybe didn't have a weather station close to you in the past, it might be good to check for some of these new locations that are coming online. Because, like you said, within 20 miles, I mean, that's farther apart, or that's closer than some people's, fields are, especially when they farm or ranch in multiple counties. So make sure to take a look at that. And then, if I know like my local elevator can text me, things. Maybe that would be something in the future to get a text update. And we talk about cattle a lot here too. But with like you said, with the weather and the wind, spraying our crops or our fields, maybe something like that when it is going to be 60 mile an hour winds, maybe some of those weather alerts, are coming through to help us plan a little bit better too.
Yeah, I know the Mesnet team has experimented with a few text alert type of things, that they use internally to try to troubleshoot or identify issues, with the weather's data. So I think it's a little ways off from being public, but something I know they have in the back of their minds of potentially, down the road, what can they develop to be more useful. Yeah, some of the heavy rain alerts, that's another one for flash flooding that we get a request for. But I should add too, on the weather stations, on the that data is updated live every 5 minutes. It's about as current as real time as you can get. And they have weather cameras at every station as well. So you can get a 360-degree view between the two cameras at every station and kind of see what the conditions are out there. And if you happen to have cattle out there, maybe watch the cattle. We've seen a lot of cattle pictures, a lot of livestock, a lot of wildlife pass through, and some cool skies of storms, and we caught a couple tornadoes, things like that.
Really?
So yeah, the weather cameras are another thing just to see kind of what the environment is like. Again, if you're far away from your animals and want to keep an eye on things.
Right. So you mentioned right when we started, or maybe it was kind of halfway through, about climate versus weather. Is there a simple difference in maybe what drives the other, or the connection, or like the disconnect of predicting one or the other?
Yeah, so the weather tends to be more short term, minutes, hours, out to about a week or so. And then climate is kind of that gray area to where climate picks up, more looking long term. The climate, we're looking at, maybe a week or so out to years and decades. But also looking historically too, what are long term trends? What have we seen historically under different conditions? Kind of matchmaking in a way. We call it analog conditions, but what other winters are similar to this winter, things like that. And yeah, looking at what we see today, when have we seen similar conditions? What might that lead to going forward? So climate bridges kind of both history and future together. Not to say that the weather, short-term weather, isn't like that too. They do that too, but they tend to forecast more in that shorter, less than a day to about a week out.
Great. So we briefly mentioned a little bit of ground being frozen, maybe, or winter kill if the ground is exposed. Do you have a estimate if we're pretty, or if we're frozen, or since we were so dry, or is our fr frost depth very low right now?
So frost depths. So what's interesting is we talked about the snowy winter conditions and week of Thanksgiving. And so for those folks that got, good snow cover, 4 to 8 inches or whatever, right away, they got that blanket of cover before the temperatures really dropped after Thanksgiving. So there are a lot of areas. If there's still snow on the ground, it's pretty likely that the soil is not frozen under there. But
Like a
as of,
blanket.
yep, exactly, it's kind of insulating it. But as the snow has been melting in mid to late December, it's exposing those soils to the cold temperatures again. And we are starting to see some frost in the ground, just kind of develop here in the, or develop in the middle part of December. So in general, as of the week of Christmas, soils are frozen down to about 2 to 15 inches, depending where you're at. Some of the deeper frost depths are in the northwestern corner, Perkins County, northern Meade County, and they didn't really have much snow cover earlier either. So
Okay. Yep.
they've kind of held on to the frost. Everywhere else is pretty variable. There are areas that are not frozen as of this week of Christmas. But again, you get a good run of a few days of colder temperatures, and it can happen in a hurry. So they're right at that tipping point.
I say it's not always common to have mud in December, but it's kind of showing up maybe a little bit, like you said, with the thawing or the melting of the snow and the ground not being totally frozen. So, just another comfort thing to keep in mind as we feed cattle, and then look towards the calving season. So, some folks are calving now. A majority of our herds are spring calvers in South Dakota, so that We'll start, January, February, and we'll go all the way to June, obviously. So maybe we can wrap up with kind of more one more time that long-term outlook of what you kind of predict for some of those calving seasons or what we can prepare while it's really nice the week of Christmas or like your New Year's.
Yeah, so latter part of January, we see a turn towards colder temperatures, especially in northern South Dakota. And it looks like that is kind of the story for February, maybe into early March. Precipitation over that late winter to springtime has equal chances officially in the outlook from NOAA, equal chances of wetter, drier, or near average for moisture for almost all of the state except for the northwestern corner, slightly leaning towards wetter. So it's kind of from Black Hills to Mobridge and that northwest corner up that way, slightly favoring towards wetter. So that's what we see right now. Again, not high confidence, I'd say, in the precipitation side of things in particular. And then as we get into the spring season, we don't have a lot of indication either way, any which way, on either temperature or precipitation. So there's really no leaning colder, warmer, wetter, drier for March through May. So that's still kind of a toss-up. Right now, but stay tuned. Those outlooks are updated the third Thursday of every month from NOAA Climate Prediction Center. So people want to check that out later in January and then again in February, depending, kind of what they're looking for. Those will get updated.
When does the drought monitor start again?
The drought monitor actually runs year round.
Oh, it does. Okay.
That's a national product, and they publish all usually Thursday mornings, every Thursday, over the holidays because of how Christmas and New Year's fell. They're publishing on Wednesdays, and this year, but usually it's Thursday mornings those maps come up.
Yeah, because as we get into, like I said, some of those native grazing situations and monitoring that grass, I know our range specialists really start looking at some of those precip guidelines or thresholds all the way, as soon as March, possibly, to say, which pastures I'm going to rest, which areas I'm going to go out and graze. Even though, our precipitation is coming in the form of snow in the wintertime, we know it can fill those dams. And in the southern side of the state, I would agree that we're still pretty dry, probably down here. All summer, it was, where are you from? Was the first question you had to ask in order to make sure you kind of had an idea of what the weather was, because we were flooding in one corner and dry in the other. But yields turned out pretty dang good across the whole state. We know cattle, like I said, they were either able to graze grass longer because of the good moisture, or the high yields, helped them stay out on some of those crop residues now too. So, anything else you want to share from, outlooks or what
Yeah,
you've been hearing from people?
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Kokoroz, which is
Yes.
our volunteer kind of rain watcher network of folks. And if you're a member of South Dakota Grassland, we have rain gauges for free if you want to participate.
So what
And
does Kokoroz stand for again?
it's the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. So
All
it's kind of
right.
a clunky acronym. It's a national program, but I'm the state coordinator here for South Dakota. I work with the National Weather Service, the three National Weather Service offices in the state. They're kind of help with the local eyes on things. And it's just checking your rain gauge and recording your precipitation, typically each morning. We have ways we don't police it too hard. If you miss a few days or if you're out of town, that's okay. But you can measure snow with it too, snow and rain. And there are some training resources available online to help you with that. And there is a really good app that you can get if you use a smartphone or you can do it on the computer. So it's a great way for your own record keeping, keep track of moisture at your place, and you can have multiple rain gauges. So if you go out once a week or every few days, to another pasture or wherever, you can keep track of it at multiple locations if you want to. So certainly get in touch with myself or Judge Jessup if you're looking for a grasslands rain gauge. Otherwise, we might have some others available too. So just reach out. They're just about 30, 35 bucks a piece if you're to buy them off the shelf. Yep.
A little bit of homework for folks to say if you are a member of one of the organizations that you can maybe get one for free. But like you said, otherwise, it's just a good local management tool because we can't manage what we don't measure, essentially. So if you can find out what is normal or average for one field or one pasture, maybe that helps you make some of more of those localized decisions a little bit better. And I would also mention that we have the SDSU Extension Red Books, or the IRM Integrated Resource Management Books, available at our extension centers as well, for folks to whether keep track of the rain in there after they submit it or when they submit it to the app or online for the Kokoroz system. In that they can also keep track of temperature, snowfall, in addition to all the calving resources that are in there. So if folks are looking for I don't want to say last minute Christmas presents, but maybe it'll be a New Year's present for some folks to
Right.
get that new rain gauge and get it up and start recording that stuff yourself if you're interested. So, all right. Well, I think that is a good enough place for us to end this episode of Cattle HQ. It's been great having Laura on. You can hear her on the radio quite often if you're driving around South Dakota. So, not an unfamiliar voice to us, but Laura, remind us where you are located and how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, great. I'm at the SDSU Extension Aberdeen Regional Center, and my email is a great way, laura.edwards@sdstate.edu. It's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And yeah, I will be out and about this winter a fair bit at some farmer meetings, commercial applicator trainings, and so on. So feel free to swing up, say hi. Let's chat about the weather. And
Intentionally talk about the weather with Laura. That's what we
Yep.
want,
I'd
right?
love to hear how it is in your corner of the state, wherever you are.
So, well, thank you for that. This has been Cattle HQ, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, eat beef.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.